Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, June 8th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for another live show here from beautiful, sweltering Scottsdale, Arizona. Temperatures already up into the hundreds and well above that, but we're inside where there's air conditioning. I don't even think my system would work outside in the heat that we've got going out there, which means that we're still feeling the burn here at Cannabis Radio and at the Russ Belville Show. Despite the electoral drubbing that Bernie Sanders took last night in the primary elections, losing California by double digits, which pretty much comes to a conclusion of Bernie Sanders' chances of convincing superdelegates to switch over and to give him the nomination. It does look like Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee to go up against the Trumpster. That's the best name I could think of at the top of my head there. But we're going to talk a little bit about that on the program. In our Behind the Headlines segment, we're going to take a look at how medical marijuana is the one issue where Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are pretty much indistinguishable. Okay, maybe not the one issue, but definitely an issue where they are indistinguishable. So we'll take a look at their past pronouncements on medical marijuana policy, see if we can read the tea leaves and give you an idea who would be the least worst candidate for the medical marijuana community. Also coming up on the show today, we've got more audio to unpack from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar and some great presentations to bring to you. First, we'll bring you a Government at Work presentation from Natalie Elaine. She is a family practice attorney in the state of Michigan, and she did a presentation on the intersection of family law and medical marijuana law, or just marijuana law in general, now that we have recreational states as well. And of course, we all know how even with legal marijuana, we have parents that are fighting terrible battles in court over child custody, over visitation, thanks to their use of cannabis, battles they wouldn't have to fight if it were prescription drugs or alcohol. So we'll hear a little bit about that from Natalie Elaine. Then at half past, we'll have a chance to get our Hemp Day update from Doug Fine, the author of Too High to Fail and Hemp Bound. He'll be joining us by telephone to give us the latest roundup of hemp legislation and politics throughout the United States and the world. Then to close out the show today, one of my favorites, Jerry Goldstein, did his annual presentation at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar where he reviews the important Fourth Amendment decisions by the United States Supreme Court. And every year he goes off on Antonin Scalia for his flip-floppery and ideological inconsistency over the past few decades. Now with the passing of Justice Scalia, and for that matter, the passing of Muhammad Ali, we get some tributes from Jerry Goldstein with respect to the legacy of Antonin Scalia, especially as it refers to drug law. Then we'll take you into hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We've got a few topics to cover today, including my candidate for one of the best marijuana headlines I've ever read. Well, best might not be the right word for it. The most marijuana headline I've ever read. The pottiest headline, the most cannabarific headline. I don't know. We'll come up with some sort of adjective for that. Also, coming up in that hour too, we've got some more stories to bring to you, including how our friend Tom Angel is uncovering the story of the Las Vegas Review Journal, a major newspaper, now deciding to go onto the prohibitionist side after years of advocating for marijuana legalization. We'll tell you why. That's coming up in hour two. Got a lot to talk about here on the Russ Belville Show. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate your support. Be back in just 2 minutes with the Cannabis Radio News.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
cannabis use isn't the only thing growing. So are we. Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
Washington, it has passed. The news organizations are calling it.
Tell everybody in the red states how great legal weed is. Yeah, looking forward to legal weed here in the state of Oregon.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Christian convictions are under attack as never before.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, June 8th, 2016. Sacramento, California. Numerous local ballot measures in California were decided in last night's primary election. Voters in Sacramento were 1.5 percentage points shy of a two-thirds majority needed to pass a 5% indoor marijuana cultivation tax. Nevada County voters overwhelmingly rejected a measure to ban outdoor marijuana cultivation. Meanwhile, Yuba County voters were unwilling to overturn an outdoor cultivation ban or require at least 4 medical marijuana dispensaries to be licensed within the county. Voters in the city of Davis resoundingly approved a tax of up to 10% on recreational marijuana. However, city leaders have repeatedly said they won't even allow medical or recreational dispensaries. Voters in San Jose overwhelmingly rejected a measure that would have undone the city's local ordinances that only allow marijuana operations in about 1% of the city. Lansing, Michigan. A long-awaited vote on reforms to Michigan's vaguely written medical marijuana laws could happen as soon as this week in the state Senate. The reforms, seeking to add regulations to dispensaries, create a tracking system for plants, and further clarify usable forms of medical marijuana, overwhelmingly passed in the House last October. But in the 7 months since, the reform stalled in the Senate following continued disagreements on a proposed tiered licensing system that was later added. The changes prompted many medical marijuana patient advocates who'd previously been on board, including Robin Schneider with the National Patients' Rights Association, to withdraw support of the bills. The tiered system proposed regulating growers, distributors, and retailers in a way that's similar to how the state regulates alcohol. Schneider contends the tiered system didn't make sense in a situation more aptly comparable to a pharmacy than a liquor store, where doses vary by case and patient. Boston, Massachusetts. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court heard two challenges Wednesday to the proposed marijuana legalization initiative in Massachusetts. The first lawsuit alleges that activists have misled voters about the initiative, including a claim by opponents that it would allow for the sale of genetically modified forms of marijuana with THC concentrations of 60% or higher. That lawsuit also claims the ballot question is misleading because it does not talk about food and drink products containing THC. The second lawsuit focuses on the title of the proposed law, marijuana legalization. Critics say the title is misleading for a law that does not legalize possession of marijuana by people under 21 and limits its use by people 21 or older. Portland, Oregon. After months of public hearings with pot growers, lawmen, public health officials, and others, an Oregon commission is racing to finalize recreational marijuana regulations and issue licenses to hundreds of businesses within a few months. But those who aim to produce souped-up coffee and other niche products might have to wait a bit longer. The commission has been grappling with its massive task, issues that Colorado and Washington State previously dealt with, including the number of licenses initially offered. Business people have been coming from around the country. Lawmakers recently tossed out a residence-only requirement to try to get a piece of Oregon's cannabis industry that already existed for 18 years with medical marijuana. The commission said it wants at least part of the supply chain ready by year's end. When complete, it will cover production from seed to store and will allow the tracking of marijuana with a computer dashboard using data from radio frequency identification scanners and tags. Denver, Colorado. Neighborhood complaints about pot smell could lead to the first ever revocation of a recreational marijuana grow license in Colorado. Starbuds operates a recreational pot shop located in the Ellara-Swansea neighborhood with a 240-plant marijuana grow on the second floor. Hearing officer Suzanne A. Facing recommended the denial of Starbuds' license for renewal, citing, quote, adverse effects caused by excessive odors, end quote. Bremerton, Washington. Pacific Cannabis owner Kathy Hartwell says her business has been getting inconsistent mail delivery from a new mail carrier. She has the video to prove it. Hartwell believes the mail carrier has a personal distaste for marijuana and has been shirking his duties as a postal employee by forcing her and her employees to needlessly travel to the post office to pick up deliveries he should be making. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, June 8th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I say, on this program, what do they want? My grandchildren and the monster. Oh, did I scare you?
Okay, maybe you're high too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Well, today in the Cannabis Focus, we take a look at medical marijuana, the issue as it relates to the presumptive candidates for the Republicans and Democrats, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Before we get to that, some breaking news just took place about a half hour ago as I was getting ready for the show. I missed this one. Sad that I missed it and didn't get it in the headlines. But the big news story, Ohio Governor John Kasich has just signed the medical marijuana law in Ohio, making it the 25th or 26th state with medical marijuana law. And the confusion as to why, we don't know if it's 26 or 25. In my records, I've got Louisiana down, as a medical marijuana state, thanks to its limited program that was recently signed by Governor John Bel Edwards. I don't know that the reporters at Cleveland.com are hip to that. So they're saying Ohio's the 25th, following Pennsylvania being the 24th. Whatever it might be, if we include Louisiana in this count, which I'm going to do, we are now looking at a situation where we have 26 states in America, plus the District of Columbia, in support of marijuana, of medical marijuana. We recently saw the poll that came out and told us that 80 to 90% of the public supports medical marijuana, depending on which demographic you're looking at or which state you're talking to. But you cannot find any less than 4 out of 5 people who support medical marijuana. With the addition of Ohio and Louisiana, we now have 55.78% of the population, almost 56% of the population that lives in a medical marijuana state. That's 179 million people living in medical marijuana states. And medical marijuana has now become the issue where the Democrats and the Republicans are almost indistinguishable. As we look back at Donald Trump, it's really hard to pin him down on anything because he changes his point of view so easily and really has no elected track record for us to look at as far as what he thinks about medical marijuana. But just judging by his statements, he seems to be okay with it. On a February interview with Bill O'Reilly, he said, "In some ways it's good, in other ways it's bad," when he's referring to legalization overall, recreational legalization. But he's also said that he's in favor of medical marijuana. Hillary Clinton, on the legalization of marijuana, has said that the states are laboratories of democracies. Let's see how Colorado and Washington and Oregon and Alaska turn out. That's kind of her wait and see approach, which is not too dissimilar from the President Obama administration's approach of turning a blind eye and letting legalization happen. So we have a situation here where these two candidates, there's not much daylight between them on the issue. Republicans, other than Donald Trump throughout this campaign, have framed it as a states' rights issue. They've said, well, I'm not for legalization myself. I would vote against it in Texas, Ted Cruz said. But if Colorado wants to go that way, they don't want to stop Colorado. Now that makes sense coming from Republicans because they're kind of got themselves trapped in that whole states' rights frame. They don't believe the federal government should be telling people what to do with Obamacare or immigration or abortion or gay marriage or bathrooms or whatever other social issue it might be. So they can't really come out and say the federal government should shut down the legalization in Colorado. In fact, this is something the uber conservative state of Idaho even came up with when their state Senate was voting that marijuana shall always be illegal forever and ever for any reason whatsoever. Yes, they really voted on that, 29-3. When they were voting on that, at the same time, they voted against calling on the federal government to enforce federal laws in Colorado and Washington with respect to marijuana. And again, it's because a lot of these states' rights Republicans don't want to get themselves caught up in denying a state's right for marijuana that could then be used against them in some of their other pet social causes. Hillary Clinton seems to have the same stance on the recreational legalization, not framing it as states' rights, but framing it as Justice Brandeis's famous laboratories of democracy. Let's see how that all works out. So it's a little less tenuous ideological position from a Democratic point of view, given Democrats tend to be more federalist and more wanting to see those kinds of controls. But functionally, it appears to me no different from Donald Trump's stance. Now, on the medical marijuana side, Trump has said medical marijuana is great. Hillary Clinton has said there needs to be more research, but this is a hard statement as well to parse until you know exactly what these two people think medical marijuana is. You and I might think medical marijuana is we can grow a plant in our own home or backyard and use it to treat ourselves. They might think medical marijuana is something like New Jersey's system or Minnesota's system where it's extremely restrictive and limited to non-smokable forms of cannabinoid medicines. So without anything further to go on, solely on the issue of marijuana and medical marijuana, I can't tell you which way to vote on Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Solely on that issue, I don't see enough daylight between them to make a distinguishable difference.
unless Trump picks Chris Christie.
You can't handle the truth.
That would be the deal breaker. If Trump involves Chris Christie in any sort of position in the Department of Justice, DEA, ONDCP, or even the transition team to select those people, then the choice would be clear. You'd have to pick Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. Or you could just vote for Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, or write in Bernie Sanders. I say vote your conscience, and we'll talk about that a little bit now or two.
Maui Wowie. Acapulco Gold. California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
We're here with Sir Richard Branson.
Far more damage has been done to people by the current approach.
Jim McMahon.
You know, a lot of the coaches are old school. You know, he used to just yell at us, go, oh, you bunch of box smokers.
John Popper on the telephone.
You know, I think in the 60s there was that kind of, the bigotry wasn't so concrete.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belleville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Reforming America's marijuana prohibition laws takes education, lobbying, and voting. From Washington, D.C. to your state capitol to your city hall, marijuana law reform involves all levels of civic life. Learn how you can make your impact with elected officials as we take a look at our government at work.
This is Natalie Elaine from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar.
I am a family law attorney in Michigan. That's all I practice. I do trial work and appellate work. And so it's been fascinating for me to watch this area develop with respect to marijuana as it interrelates with child custody and parenting time issues. Everyone here has probably had some exposure to family law cases if you haven't handled one directly. Even in your criminal work, you probably deal with parents and have questions occasionally and maybe refer cases out. Do any other practitioners in here practice family law, custody and divorce work, and then, of course, the abuse neglect segment as well? Great. So if you want to pipe up with your own stories, if something resonates with you, I'd love to hear that. I have some particular Michigan anecdotes to share with you. We have a little bit of a better pulse on what's going on locally in the trial court levels in Michigan. And then as it pertains to the national level, I'll share, talk about some cases that are out there. However, the dearth of medical marijuana and now, of course, recreational marijuana case law is quite evident across the nation, not just in Michigan. There are very, very few appellate cases, published or unpublished, that deal with child custody and parenting time matters as it pertains to marijuana use. So I think the reason for that is pretty identifiable, at least in my view. I believe that parents are really hesitant to be the test case. They would rather stop using, comply with court directives as illegal or unconstitutional as the directives may be. They just don't want to risk losing their children. It is the highest stake out there, perhaps even greater than their own personal freedom. It's important to know when you do talk to clients who need family law advice or run into people who are dealing with the courts as it pertains to family law and medical marijuana, or recreational now, of course, that each state is going to have a different standard, and usually it is set forth in the Medical Marijuana Act or the Marijuana Act itself. And the provisions and the protections that are outlined in the Act are going to be the starting point and are very, very critical to understand. So whatever state you're in, that's the starting point that you want to go to, is what is the standard in our state? What protections does a parent have? And the language used in the statute is very, very important. I'm knocking things over up here. It's a very crowded podium. So in our state, for example, Michigan, and really, I haven't found a state this is not true in. The parent is going to have to be in compliance with the Medical Marijuana Act, and I'm going to refer mostly to medical marijuana because the newer states that have legalized recreational are really not, you know, there's very little out there with respect to the law as it relates to family law. But in the medical marijuana sense, you've got to be in compliance with the state's act before you're afforded any protection. So that's really important. So that's a really key provision. If you're not doing something right in compliance with the act, you have too many plants, you're not storing your medical marijuana properly, or you're smoking around your children, or you're doing anything else that violates your particular state's act, you are going to be treated or can be treated under the domestic law just like a regular illegal drug user. So if you are advising a client who is a user or a provider, then go through the steps with them and ensure that they are in full compliance with the act. If you're litigating against a parent who wants the protection of an act or the act who's using or supplying, then you're going to want to test whether that person is in compliance. You really want to make friends, those of you who don't do family law, with a family law attorney. And this is a reversal for me because usually I'm speaking to a room full of family lawyers and I say make friends with a criminal defense attorney. There really is a very important intersection between the two pieces of law here, the criminal defense arena and the family law arena. So you don't want to go this alone on either side. You want to be really familiar with the law on both sides to make sure that you know how to give the best advice. With this explosion of legalization of medical and recreational marijuana, certainly this has brought to the forefront beliefs and attitudes about the use of marijuana with or without state sanction. This territory is, like I said, pretty untested. And so we're getting very, very wide results as cases percolate through the trial court system and the few that make it up to the appellate court system. I will say I've seen a little bit of a reversal of a trend that I believe is positive. At least that's what I'm going to say. That's what I'm going to hold on to. I'm going to choose to be optimistic that we may be going a little bit away from the figure out how to take these kids away from any parent who uses marijuana in any way, shape, or form to we can't be so hasty with this. There are laws that we have to comply with. So that's a really positive trend, and I'll share with you a few very new cases that I believe showcase that trend. But as with any new venture, this has raised more questions than answers at this point in time. And the questions we're seeing arise most frequently are, for instance, if a parent is a card-carrying marijuana patient, does this give the parent carte blanche to use their medication at any point in time and in any amount they choose? We don't know the answer to that. Because a doctor's certification, as it's called in Michigan at least, contains no dosage, can the court determine how much a parent should take or use? We've had different answers on that, some of them a little frightening. Can a court order a parent not to use marijuana, medical marijuana, not to medicate at all during parenting time? Or at all, period? And we have appellate cases that affirm that a court can say you cannot medicate at all, period. Well, of course not, because that's the double standard, right? So the harshness with which marijuana is being treated is incredibly different than what prescription drugs, how prescription drugs are viewed and treated in custody matters, and alcohol. So at this point, I think the pendulum is so far toward anti-marijuana and we have to protect children at all costs. Hopefully it will swing, but it's nowhere near the treatment of prescription drugs, in my opinion at least. Can a court order a parent to be drug tested? And if so, how can they use the results of those tests? Particularly when we know how long marijuana can show in one system. Can a court remove children from homes in which there is the use of medical or now recreational marijuana? In any event, you'll see as I go through these in a moment that there are all sorts of different standards being applied in these domestic cases. There's a law review article I found pretty interesting. It's 2012 now, but it's called The High Price of Parenting High, Medical Marijuana and Its Effects on Child Custody Matters. It's cited in our materials, but the author of that suggests a conduct-based standard to unify the standard at which this is applied, to ensure that people may use marijuana to treat medical conditions in accord with state law without fear of losing their children as a result. And I think that's a really rational and reasonable approach, to take away some of the subjectivity, not that that would fully eliminate it perhaps, but we have to work to take away some of the subjectivity with which this topic is being treated.
That's Natalie Elaine, a Michigan family law attorney, talking about the imposition on people's parental rights due to their use of marijuana, even medical marijuana, even in the states where that is legal. We still have a lot of work to do. Legalization is only the beginning. We have to end the stigma, end the discrimination, end the separate but equal treatment that we have as cannabis consumers. We won't stop until that happens. This is my 1,701st show toward that end. And tomorrow will be my 100th show on CannabisRadio.com. Stay tuned. Doug Fine is next with our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
How high do you like your profit margin?
CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry.
Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update. Well, folks, sorry to say, but unfortunately we're not able to connect to Doug Fine. He's out there in the hinterlands of New Mexico somewhere, and we got an email from him that he would be on today, but wasn't able to make the connection somehow. So we're going to bring you some hemp information from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar. This is Portland attorney Courtney Moran.
In Monson v. DEA, 8th Circuit 2009, the 8th Circuit concluded, under the CSA, marijuana is defined as all cannabis sativa, regardless of the THC concentration. The CSA likewise makes no distinction between cannabis grown for drug use and for industrial use. They also noted that the CSA unambiguously bans the cultivation of marijuana regardless of its use. And in footnote 4, the court noted, which I pointed out to you in that definition before, the statutory definition of marijuana excludes certain parts of the plant cannabis sativa L, not relevant to this discussion. The court further stated, we find no evidence that Congress intended otherwise than to ban the growth of all C sativa, absent compliance with the federal registration requirement. They confirmed the conclusions of the district court and noted that industrial hemp, as defined by the North Dakota statute, is marijuana. So the courts have been consistent in upholding DEA's interpretation of the definition of marijuana under the Controlled Substances Act to say that it includes all C sativa, does not matter what the THC concentration is, does not matter what the use is. Marijuana, industrial hemp, all C sativa, all cultivation is prohibitive absent that federal registration requirement. Now, this has slightly changed in 2014, which we will get to. The other landmark case for industrial hemp is Hemp Industries versus DEA. Now, in 2001, the DEA issued an interpretive rule which stated that all products containing any amount of THC are Schedule I controlled substances. So the manufacturers and distributors that sell industrial hemp products, especially hemp seed, hemp oil, and hemp seed oil cake, appealed this regulation, because this regulation would have banned the possession and the sale of any of the products that they had been selling for years. So they filed a suit in the Ninth Circuit, but the Ninth Circuit abstained from considering the merits of the case because DEA had issued only an interpretive rule and not a final rule. But they did conclude that THC naturally occurring with non-psychoactive hemp products did not fall within the DEA's regulation. Then in 2003, the DEA did finally issue final rules, which exempted from control non-psychoactive hemp products that contain trace amounts of THC that are not intended for human consumption. So all of these retailers and manufacturers, if any of their products were, you know, hemp foods, for example, still prohibited. So still an issue with any hemp products intended for human consumption. So once DEA had issued these final rules, the Ninth Circuit considered the merits of the case. The Ninth Circuit concluded, under the Chevron standards, Congress did not regulate non-psychoactive industrial hemp in Schedule I. The Ninth Circuit looked to whether the DEA's followed appropriate procedures in trying to classify non-psychoactive industrial hemp products as a controlled substance, and they held that the DEA's action is not a mere classification of industrial hemp, or of THC, excuse me, regulations. It improperly renders naturally occurring non-psychoactive hemp illegal for the first time. The Ninth Circuit concluded DEA cannot regulate naturally occurring THC not contained within or derived from marijuana. Non-psychoactive hemp products, because non-psychoactive hemp is not included in Schedule 1. DEA did not appeal this decision to the Supreme Court. So HIA versus DEA, the 2004 case, Hemp 2, confirmed the legality of industrial hemp products, even for products intended for human consumption. So we do not have a split between the circuits. First and Eighth Circuits say industrial hemp cultivation is illegal absent the federal registration. The Ninth Circuit says industrial hemp products are legal. They didn't even touch on the cultivation issue. So any hemp products that you can find in any store, those are all legal products. They always have been. This case confirmed that. It's the cultivation that is the issue. Now, despite these rulings in the First and Eighth Circuit, states started to legalize hemp in 1999 after, in 1998, Canada legalized full commercial cultivation. Now, North Dakota is right on the border of Canada. There are farmers in northern North Dakota that saw, hey, half a mile away from me, there are farmers growing industrial hemp. They are making economic profits from this crop. Why can't I grow this? So seeing that economic potential in 1999, North Dakota became the first state to re-legalize industrial hemp. 2002, Montana, West Virginia. 2008, Vermont. 2009, Maine and Oregon. 2012, Colorado. 2013, Kentucky and California. But this is only nine states over 14 years. Now, in August of 2013, the Department of Justice issued the Cole Memo outlining the eight enforcement priorities in regards to marijuana in response to Washington and Colorado legalizing adult use marijuana. Congressman Blumenauer in Oregon, he has been a champion for all cannabis federally and in the state of Oregon, and he wrote a letter to the Oregon Department of Justice saying, well, shouldn't this Cole Memo apply to industrial hemp if DEA considers the definition of marijuana to say all cannabis sativa? So U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall responded, since industrial hemp is marijuana under the CSA, these eight enforcement priorities do apply to industrial hemp just as they do for all forms of cannabis. Federal prosecutors will remain aggressive when it comes to protecting these eight priorities. So in Oregon specifically, this really did help move our program along. We had legalized back in 2009, and it wasn't until after the issuance of this memo that the Department of Agriculture began putting together a Rules Advisory Committee. A year later, we finally had licenses in place, and we were able to cultivate last year. Then the Agricultural Act of 2014 came into play. And in the Farm Bill, there is a provision outlining industrial hemp research. So since February 7th of 2014, when President Obama signed into law the Agricultural Act of 2014, we have been able to conduct research of industrial hemp. So the provisions of the Farm Bill provide that state departments of agriculture and institutions of higher education are authorized to conduct industrial hemp research and agricultural pilot programs for industrial hemp research, including market research. What Congress also did, which is very important, is they defined industrial hemp. And this is the first time industrial hemp has been defined in federal law. And again, as I mentioned this earlier, it's defined as this arbitrary 0.3% THC concentration. But at least we're getting somewhere. In response, since February of 2014, 18 states have legalized some form of industrial hemp cultivation. You'll see I have listed on here, some states have legalized only research as is compliant with the Agricultural Act of 2014, but some states have legalized full commercial cultivation. And this is really significant. There's so much media attention around marijuana adult use legalization. Four states have legalized, DC has legalized, but in 2 years, 18 states have legalized industrial hemp cultivation. Where's the media attention around that? Now, pursuant to the provisions in the Agricultural Act of 2014, there are at least 20 universities that are engaging in industrial hemp research. There are likely more. However, these universities still have to comply with the DEA registration requirement. So all of these universities, if they are planning to import viable hemp seeds, they have had to go through the DEA registration process, go through the import procedure process, which takes a very long time. DEA, has been hesitant, but has granted these licenses or these registrations. Now, I don't know if any of you are familiar, back in 2014, Kentucky tried to implement their industrial hemp research program. They purchased seeds for their farmers from Italy. They had the seeds imported at the border. DEA seized the seeds. Customs held on to them. A lawsuit was filed. After some negotiations, they were finally able to get the seeds back and were able to plant. But DEA is trying to seize control over industrial hemp, any aspect that they can, despite the allowance that has been granted in the Agricultural Act. Now, Congress While they have not enacted the Industrial Hemp Farming Act, it is a bill that has been put before Congress six different times. It is a companion bill right now going through the U.S. legislature, unlikely to actually gain any traction. However, to protect the provisions that they put in place in the Agricultural Act, they started putting in protections in the appropriations bills, similar to what they have done for medical marijuana in the last two appropriations bills. So in the 2015 Consolidated and Further Continuing Appropriations Act, they put in Section 539, which prohibits any funds from DEA or DOJ to be used in contravention of Section 7606, which is that research provision. In 2016, they enacted a similar rider in that provision, but they also put in an additional rider, which is very helpful for any farmers that are or processors trying to engage in market research, which is authorized under the Farm Bill. So Section 763 removes any federal funding from any federal agency that interferes with the research provisions under the Agricultural Act, but also any funds that would be used to prohibit the transportation, processing, sale, or use of industrial hemp that is grown or cultivated in compliance with the Farm Bill, but within or with outside the state. So as we already discussed, hemp products are legal. The issue is the cultivation. But this allows very clearly for transportation across state lines. Okay, it doesn't allow it. It removes any funding from agencies to interfere with that transportation, which is very significant. So this is going to be coming into play this summer and this upcoming fall when farmers that are going to be harvesting their plants want to send their crops across state lines for processing.
Courtney Moran, a Portland attorney and expert in industrial hemp, delivering her remarks at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar just this last weekend. We're going to take a very short break here and get right back to Aspen with remarks from Jerry Goldstein, the famed San Antonio criminal defense attorney, his remarks on the passing of Muhammad Ali and Justice Antonin Scalia. You won't want to miss this one. Then coming up in hour two, we got all sorts of other stories to tell you about. The most cannabis-y headline of the year, and a report on the Las Vegas Review-Journal. All that coming up in hour two. Stay tuned.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
And one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Every year at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar, Jerry Goldstein delivers this presentation.
After my brief discussion, and by the way, I can do this, I promise Keith, in 2.5 hours. We'll be going out to Owl Farm, which was the residence of the patron saint and poet laureate of our movement, a good friend and an old client. Many of you may not know this, but he is a son of Louisville. And yesterday, we lost another giant from Louisville, who actually epitomized righteousness in the face of oppression. He was a black male, and he was an eloquent champion for justice, Muhammad Ali. My hat's off to him. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Supremes, as we often do, and Keith has made me promise to at least try and stick with the Fourth Amendment, and we're going to be talking about what's hot and what's not. This year, this term, and perhaps much of next term, is going to be different. It already is. And that's the reason. And you'll have heard me go on and on about Justice Scalia. Well, we're going to talk about his legacy. And I'll try and not be as harsh and hard as I have been out of respect for those who are no longer with us. But he was a court of one. He was a strident voice, caustic, intelligent, often humorous, dealt with cutting-edge issues, abortion, same-sex marriage, affordable health care, Obamacare, right to bear arms, campaign spending, the death penalty. He was strident about all these, whether in the majority or in the defense, and he could rarely withhold comment. And it was acerbic, interesting comment at that. Now, just on the humorous side, public nudity. This is Barnes versus Glenn Theater, a case that came out of Indiana. Perhaps the dissenters believe that offense to others ought to be the only reason for restricting nudity in public places. However, I think the purpose of the Indiana's nudity law would be violated if 60,000 fully consenting adults crowded into the Hoosier Dome to display their genitals to one another, even if there was not an offended innocent in the house. He liked this kind of public accommodation. Are there any golfers here? Not many in our crowd, but I will tell you that this was about a golfer, a professional golfer, who wanted to avail himself of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And he wanted to use a golf cart, and of course, in the PGA, you had to walk between shots. Scalia dissents from the application. He says, I am sure that the framers of the Constitution, aware of the 1457 edict of King James II of Scotland prohibiting golf because it interfered with the practice of archery, fully expected that sooner or later the paths of golf and government, the law and the links, would once again cross, and the judges of this august court would someday have to wrestle with the age-old jurisprudential question for which their years of study in the law have so well prepared them. Is someone riding around in a golf cart actually a golfer? That's part of the opinion. He was definitely often on a golf cart. And usually carried something more devastating than a 9-iron, which some of the people here are well aware of. Sausage, he points out in Community Nutrition Institute versus Block. This case involving legal requirements for the content and labeling of meat products such as Frankfurters affords a rare opportunity to explore simultaneously both parts of Bismarck's aphorism that no man should see how laws or sausages are made. I would suggest probably a Supreme Court majority opinion on the 8-person court today as well. Let's go ugly. Scalia on the death penalty. He professed no innocent has ever been executed. You know, in every case, some fucking Jewish lawyer is going to take it up and, you know, we're going to save the guy's ass. It should be noted at the outset that the dissent does not discuss a single case, not one, in which it is clear that a person was executed for a crime he did not commit. If such an event had occurred in recent years, we would not have to hunt for it. The innocent's name would be shouted from the rooftops by the abolition lobby. Well, Cameron Todd Willingham, a case that Barry Sheck and I are intently working on today, hopefully we will place our second Texas judge in jail. Collins versus, hang on, it gets better. Collins versus Collins. Kind of, I guess, some kind of bodily fluid. Justice Blackmun, this is when Justice Blackmun made that famous dissent. From this day forward, I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death. Rather than continue to coddle the court's delusion that the desired level of fairness has been achieved, I feel obligated simply to concede that the death penalty experiment has failed. Scalia's response. The death penalty, death by injection, which Justice Blackmun describes, looks pretty desirable next to a lot of the other cases we've got before us. And he cites a particular case of this 11-year-old girl who's been raped by four individuals and then choked to death by placing her panties in her mouth and suffocating her. And he says, how enviable a quiet death by lethal injection compared with that. The individual he was speaking about was Henry Lee McCollum. Had he had his way, Henry Lee would no longer be with us. As it turns out, 2 years later, Henry Lee McCollum was exonerated by DNA. One has to wonder. This is a quote from him in that same case. Mere actual innocence is no reason not to carry out a death sentence properly reached. I'm sorry, mere actual innocence? What the fuck are our courts doing? That ought to be the core of what they are concerned about. There's no reason not to carry out a... Well, it's not properly reached if the person is actually innocent, no matter how we get there. The immediate impact of Scalia's absence. I was never good at math, or I would have become a doctor like Dr. Hart, and y'all wouldn't have to put up with my bullshit. But arithmetic's what it's all about this term, and probably most of the next term. We've got 8 justices. It reminds you of Justice Brennan's famous quote. He said, when it comes to constitutional rights, the most important skill required of each justice is the ability to count to 5. No question about that. Well, here's some breaking news. 2 weeks ago, there was a 4-4 split. In it, the 11th Circuit had granted, believe it or not, the 11th Circuit had granted a stay of execution for Vernon Madison. By 4-4, this is the division. We're going to be seeing this all a lot. By 4-4, and if you notice in another case, an important case involving the health care and contraception, the court, in a almost unanimous decision, sent it back to the circuit court asking them to see if the folks couldn't compromise, if we couldn't find a way to deal with this, realizing they couldn't do it themselves. That same week, by the way, Foster versus Georgia, it has nothing to do with Scalia, but this is a Batson challenge. In Georgia, imagine that, they struck all the blacks. The Chief Justice, writing for a majority of 7, by the way, Alito didn't participate, so it was a 7-1 decision. Roberts describes the reasons, the race-neutral reasons these prosecutors, or we should say persecutors, use. He called them misrepresentations, false, nonsense, pretextual, not credible. I think that means lying sack of shit. Mischaracterizations of the record, reeked of afterthought. The sole defense was the only African-American on our Supreme Court. And in Scalia-like language, he says the court today invites state prisoners to go searching for new evidence by demanding the files of the prosecutors. Imagine that. We want the files of the prosecutors. Well, let me just tell you, have we not been able to get the files of the prosecutors, this man, Michael Martin, would still be serving life in prison without parole for the brutal death of his wife. And without the files of the prosecutors, we wouldn't have been able to take Judge Anderson, we've talked about this before, to task, where he was found guilty of contempt, sentenced to jail and disbarred. We need the access to this kind of discovery. And Brother Grissom came to us the other day and exposed his soul. We need more prosecutors than we do persecutors. We need folks that are there for justice, like our good friend.
That's Jerry Goldstein, the renowned defense attorney, speaking at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar. And I'll have that full audio, it's about an hour long, posted up to my SoundCloud page by the weekend. Got the rest of the audio processed as well, and we'll get those links up and available to you. You'll also be able to find them through normal.org and marijuana.com. For everyone here in beautiful, scorching Scottsdale, Arizona, at cannabisradio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for hour 2, and don't forget, coming up at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the brand new episode of the Tommy Chong Podcast, exclusively here on cannabisradio.com. Tommy and Paris Chong talking the latest about cannabis, marijuana, hemp, ganja, herb, bud, spliff, weed, grass, whatever you like to call it. Tommy and Paris are talking about it. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.